And let me start by introducing her. She's Johanna Erdmenger, professor for theoretical physics at Würzburg University since 2016. After working for many years as a research group leader at the Max Planck Institute for Physics in Munich, and before that, she was also an Eminöter group leader at the Humboldt University. So that's exactly where our first speaker is now working. She is an expert in quantum field theory and very well known for her work on various aspects of the so-called gauge gravity duality or ADS-CFT duality. So she's an expert on super conformal and conformal field theories and has worked on many topics from ray dynamics to string theory to applications of so-called holography to condensed matter physics, including superfluidity and the Kondo effect. Today, she will talk about the relation between quantum information theory and black holes. Looking forward to your talk, Johanna.
Yeah, hello. Thanks very much for this very kind introduction. And I'm very pleased to be here. I should say that in principle, I was supposed to be at Perimeter for a sabbatical for 6 months, but unfortunately this didn't happen. So I hope this will happen in the near future. But anyway, it's very nice to see all of you here. So I'm a physicist, and so the talk is going to be much more from the physics perspective, but there's actually quite a lot of questions that address mathematicians, and then so I hope you I get the mathematicians particularly interested in what I'm going to say. Okay, before I start, let me quickly show our group at Würzburg University. So I should say Würzburg is about 100 kilometers to the west of Erlangen, where our previous speaker was located or is located. And so here you see our group, and this is me. And of course, this picture was taken in the long foregone times when we were not all supposed to wear masks. Okay, so let me start talking about this very interesting relation between quantum information and quantum computing on the one hand side, and their astonishing relations to black holes, which you wouldn't expect at first that these objects are related. So what is a quantum computer about? Well, a quantum computer is a device that processes qubits, and qubits are entangled states, as shown here in this very simple example of just two entangled spins. And black holes, on the other side, are particular solutions of Einstein's equations. And as I'm going to show to you, there are much more strong relations than first expected between these two objects. And the relation comes particularly from the point of view that entanglement, as is very necessary for having a qubit, can actually be mapped to a particular or to particular geometric objects, as I'm going to show to you. Okay, so a brief overview and also a list of take-home messages for this short talk. I'll talk you briefly through some concepts of quantum information theory and most notably entanglement. I recall very briefly some properties of black holes. And then, as was mentioned, my area of research is mostly gauge gravity duality, and that of course comes into play when providing a link between one and two. And as an example of relating entanglement and geometry, I'll talk briefly about entanglement entropy and also computational complexity. Okay, so just to recall what entanglement is, so we start in a Hilbert space, and a pure state is just a state vector psi in the Hilbert space, while on the other hand, there's also mixed states that are described by density matrices as is given here, so where P is a classical probability that the system is in the state psi n. A second important category to classify states in the Hilbert space is to distinguish the entangled states that I already mentioned here, shown again in this simple example, from product states, which can be separated, which are separable. Now, a very useful concept for describing pure and mixed states is the so-called von Neumann entropy, which is a generalization of the Boltzmann statistical entropy to the realm of quantum mechanics. And it is given by this formula here, where rho is the density matrix. So this von Neumann entropy is maximized when rho is diagonal with equal entries. This means when we have a maximally mixed state, While on the other hand, it vanishes for pure states, because for pure states, this density matrix acts as a projector, and then you have this relation, and this also entails that this object then vanishes. And this von Neumann, now entropy plays an important role also in the context of entanglement, and it can be used to define the concept of entanglement entropy. So for this, we consider a product Hilbert space, so a Hilbert space which we can be factorized into two parts. And for this Hilbert space, we may now define a so-called reduced density matrix, which is obtained. So this density matrix is called rho A for Hilbert space HA. And so this is given by taking the trace over the states of B of the total density matrix of this total system. And there's some messages in the chat. I'm not sure if this.
Okay, no, so please just go ahead. We ignore the chat.
Yeah, okay. So good. I was just wondering if somebody was asking a question, but you're of course most welcome to ask questions. Good. So the reduced density matrix is just taking the trace in Hilbert space B of the total density matrix of this complete Hilbert space. And the entanglement entropy is then just defined as the von Neumann entropy that I just introduced for this reduced density matrix. And so now this has the important property that if this is non-zero, then the states in A and B must be entangled with each other. So now this concept is true for general Hilbert spaces, but we can also apply it to a space region by defining Hilbert space A as being a particular region of space, and B its complement as shown here. Oops, that was the wrong, I have to push here. Okay, so that was my brief introduction to entanglement entropy. So now this I would like to relate to black holes. So just a very brief reminder. So black holes are gravity objects with remarkable quantum properties. They are very massive, and because they have such a large mass, they lead to a very strong curvature of the space around them. And an important property, of course, is that once matter or light passes the so-called Schwarzschild radius, then it is trapped inside the black hole and cannot escape anymore, which leads to the formation of a horizon. Now, there was a big scientific interest in them recently due to the direct observation of black holes, notably from gravitational waves, but there were also other means like this nice picture here from the Event Horizon Telescope. And here, just to recall the Schwarzschild metric, so when this coordinate Z reaches the horizon value, then we cannot form a suitable scalar product of this metric anymore. And so this indicates the position of the horizon. Of course, there are other metrics that allow a better description of the region inside the horizon. Okay, so, but black holes are not just classical solutions of Einstein's equations, but they also have very important quantum properties, most notably related to the names of Hawking and Wittgenstein. And in particular, black holes are expected to emit thermal radiation, which is associated to the Hawking temperature, and the Hawking temperature is essentially proportional to the inverse of the horizon of the black hole. Now, Wittgenstein proposed that the entropy of a black hole actually scales with the area of the horizon divided by 4 times the Newton constant. So it doesn't scale with the volume, it scales with the area. So this is an important property, quantum property of black holes. Now, of course, a further important aspect related to the quantum properties of black holes is the so-called information paradox, which states that if matter in a pure quantum state enters a black hole, it is transformed into the mixed thermal state associated with this black hole, and the information about the original state is lost. And there has been considerable progress recently in understanding this. However, a full understanding of quantum black holes requires a theory of quantum gravity. And as you all know, there have been very many approaches and successes in this direction, but still there is no universal theory of quantum gravity yet. But what I'm going to tell you next actually may provide some new insights in this direction. And actually, since the word information shows up here, it already shows a relation to quantum information as is studied in the context of quantum computers, which then relates the two objects that were mentioned in the title of my talk. So this Wittgenstein entropy, where the entropy, the thermal entropy, is actually related to the area of the horizon, is intimately linked to something called the holographic principle. And this means that the information content of black holes is encoded in their horizon area, very similar to a hologram, where in a hologram you can encode three-dimensional information in a two-dimensional surface, and similar relations between volumes and areas can be formulated in arbitrary numbers of dimensions. And so the holographic principle is, of course, at the heart of the ADS-CFT correspondence. And so it also is very, very crucial in generalizations of the ADS-CFT correspondence to more general models of gauge gravity duality. So in particular, within gauge gravity duality, there are models where black holes in hyperbolic spacetimes, so spacetimes with a constant negative curvature, are mapped to strongly coupled quantum field theories at finite temperature. And the information stored in the black hole is mapped to the information stored in the quantum field theory. So, and this indeed provides very, very interesting relations between quantum information on the one hand side and black holes on the other. Now, of course, gauge gravity duality involves quantum field theories. So to really use quantum information concepts to study black holes, it is actually necessary to generalize quite a few concepts from quantum information theory that were developed for finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, indeed to infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces. And that's part of the challenge, and certainly also this is an interesting mathematical problem. So, just very quickly, what's gauge gravity duality? Well, it is a duality between, on one hand side, a gauge theory, a quantum field theory without gravity, and on the other hand, a gravity theory. So, of course, the word duality is used in mathematics in very different circumstances. And here I have a rather physical definition of the word duality, meaning that I have one particular theory given by an action or Lagrangian or Hamiltonian, and a different theory made out of different degrees of freedom with another action or a different Hamiltonian. And the situation should be such, so this happens actually quite a lot in physics, that both of these theories with these different actions actually describe the same physical system. And thus they must be related to each other, and this relation I will very generally call a duality. Of course, all the other instances of the word duality that occur in mathematics are quite related to this physical definition. And so gauge gravity duality is a relation in the sense that I just introduced between a gauge theory, a quantum field theory without gravity, and a gravity theory in higher dimensions. So in fact, gauge gravity duality is actually so far a conjecture without a mathematical proof. So again, another task where mathematics can eventually come to our help. And this conjecture follows from a particular low energy limit of string theory. So, and it's a duality also in the sense that it relates quantum field theories at strong coupling to theory of gravity, theories of gravity at weak coupling that are, of course, much simpler to solve. And there's also this aspect of a hologram referred to as holography, that it maps quantum field theory in D dimensions to gravitational theories in one dimension higher. And you can imagine the quantum field theory to be defined on the boundary of this higher dimensional space. Now, let me come back to our concept of entanglement entropy to show you a relation between quantum information and black holes. So the starting point of using quantum information theory in this context, this is a rather famous paper by Ryo and Takayanagi from 2006. And what they suggested is that the leading term in the entanglement entropy that I defined a few slides ago is actually in the dual gravity theory given by the area of the minimal surface in this extra dimensions. So if remember that before I introduced just these two regions A and B, let me just show them quite quickly to you. So this was my space region A and the complement B, where I defined this entanglement entropy in terms of the density matrix. And now the proposal is, so this proposal actually passed many tests, that now if I add an extra dimension in this for this anti-de Sitter space, that now if my region A is now here in the surface here with the complement B, then the entanglement entropy in this quantum field theory associated to this region is given by the area of this minimal surface here in this hyperbolic extra dimension. And so this is a very nice example of relating something in quantum theory, quantum statistics, to something in geometry. And this is the message I would like to convey, that there's not many instances where this is possible. And I hope that in the future, this will provide a lot of further insight into quantum gravity and also vice versa into new concepts in quantum computing. Okay, so then we can put formulae to this. So there's a famous result by Cardi and Calabrese, where they calculated the entanglement entropy for a strip and a conformal field theory in 1+1 dimensions. And the result is given here, where C is the central charge of the conformal field theory, L is the width of the strip, and lambda is an UV cutoff. And this result is now exactly reproduced by this geometrical calculation that I just mentioned by Ryu and Takayanagi, identifying the boundary cutoff in the radial direction. So because it's a hyperbolic space, we need a cutoff here because this is a non-compact direction. And identifying the central charge with this quantity, which involves this three-dimensional Newton constant and the so-called ADS wages. And so then the calculation of this area reproduces explicitly this result. This result may also be generalized to finite temperature, and at finite temperature, we obtain this expression here. Finite temperature on the gravity side means then that we consider a black hole in our hyperbolic space-time. Okay, so this is the first example of relating a quantum statistics object to a geometrical object. And now the area of research I'm working on currently is to find further examples of this connection. And so this is just really an area of research which is quite at its start, and there's many things to be done in the future. So another example is the so-called Fisher information metric. So this is actually originates from an area of mathematics called information geometry, which combines information theory and differential geometry. And so in fact, we can define metrics on spaces of probability distributions. In view of the time, let me not talk through all the details here. So this is how this metric is defined in terms of this particular probability distribution. And the upshot of this slide is that for a Gaussian distribution, actually this particular metric, which is associated to these probability distributions, gives you precisely the metric of an anti-de Sitter space, so which is just another name for a hyperbolic space-time. And so there's this very interesting connection that on one hand side, you start with a rather simple Gaussian probability distribution, but this gives you precisely this metric of this hyperbolic space-time that we just considered in our previous example as well. Now, this is quite exciting, but this example, of course, what it lacks is the dynamics. I mean, this is just a geometrical relation. And to really understand this gauge gravity duality, one would, on top of this, need to understand where the dynamics in the two cases comes from, rather than just relating these geometrical quantities. But I think this is a nice starting point for maybe understanding ADS CFT and gauge gravity in a much more general context than the spring theory context that I mentioned earlier. Okay. How many minutes do I have left?
one to two.
Okay, good. Then I will be done pretty quickly. So another object that we studied is the so-called computational complexity. And essentially, the idea is to consider a set of predefined unitary transformations in the Hilbert space. And complexity is then a quantity from quantum information theory that tells you how many of these are actually need to be applied to reach any given state from a starting point reference state. So here, this is written just in a slightly more mathematical terms. So so there are these unitary operations that we can add here are called gates. So the complexity of a state is given by the minimal number of gates required to map the reference state to this final state up to a given tolerance. And so there's been quite a lot of discussion of realizing this concept also for black holes, because it turned out actually that entanglement entropy is not really enough to understand all the aspects of information in black holes. And so there's this proposal by Susskind that this computational complexity, which I just introduced, might actually be given by a particular volume in a gravity theory with a black hole. So here you see a conformal diagram of a hyperbolic space with a black hole. So here are the boundaries of the space, and these lines are the horizon. So our black hole is here. And this proposal then states that if you have two quantum field theories, which are here and there, and so the states here and there are actually entangled, then the entanglement entropy and also the complexity should be given by the length of this particular curve. And this will actually grow linearly with time, which is the motivation for identifying this with complexity. And there's another proposal relating the complexity to a particular gravitational action on the so-called Wheeler-DeWitt patch. So, and there are these two different proposals around, and they have led to quite a lot of investigations how to understand this in these quantum information theoretic terms. And so this is also something I've been working on quite a bit recently. And here you see a picture where we study a black hole. So this is just a constant time slice of a black hole in the hyperbolic space time. So when the boundary is here at the outside, this is the black hole, obviously. And then we calculate complexities for particular entangling regions at the boundary. And so if you have a small boundary, then your entangling surface would just be doing something like this. But then if you make this really, really big and it starts wrapping around the black hole, then at some point there will be a topological transition between this black line and the green line. And in fact, it will be more energetically favorable for the black hole to actually have a minimal first surface of this time type plus this green line actually wrapping the black hole. And then you see there's a topological transition between winding number zero and winding number one around the black hole. Now, what's actually very interesting that this entails a jump, a discrete change in the computational complexity. And we were able to reproduce this gravitational result with a calculation using the so-called tensor networks, which is something very often used in quantum information theory. And so in fact, here again, we have our black hole and our hyperbolic space-time, but now we just put in the tensor network in particular cases can be mapped to an Ising model in the space. And so blue is spin up and red is spin down. And this particular behavior and this particular jump can be reproduced in this quantum information theoretical model and compared to the black hole, which I also found a very nice and interesting scenario. Okay, I don't want to keep you for a long time. So we actually, in our group, we have quite a lot of projects in this direction. And let me just mention that three of them were actually done by female PhD students in the context spirit of the conference. So here there is my student Nina Miklai, who worked on holographic entanglement in arbitrary dimensions. Then there's my student Annalena Weigel, who worked on this computational complexity in interacting conformal field theories. And then there's also my student Anne-Kathrin Straub, who actually studied the time dependence of entanglement in the ADS-CFT correspondence. And so this brings me to the end. So what you should remember is that gauge gravity duality is a new paradigm in physics. It provides new relations between entanglement and space-time. And there's a lot of new tasks for the future, in particular also from the mathematics point of view, to investigate the new links between quantum information and quantum gravity. So in order to make progress in two directions, have a better understanding of quantum gravity and black holes, but also learning more of about quantum information and quantum computing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for an information-packed, beautiful talk. Only mild criticism intended. Not in terms of contents, but in terms of length. So can I invite questions? Raise your hand or just speak up.
I see two raised hands.
Oh, okay. I can't see them. But so just who? Please, so someone.
I see two. I see Maria and Feline. Maybe we start with Maria because she's top on my list.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, really nice talk. I was wondering if there's an update on relevant observables for the ADS-CFT duality, still in the quark-gluon plasma. I work in this area in physics, and it used to be that the viscosity that you get from the theoretical side, it was kind of like a, one of the main observables that we could get from the, like a lower bound from the theory. And I was wondering, now that you're working on entropy, this is a quantity that we can actually follow experimentally as well in the plasma. So I was wondering if you have an update on that.
Yeah, okay, so I should say the viscosity is a transport coefficient, and we calculated a couple more transport coefficients, for instance, vorticity. So there's
vorticity is very, very nice, yeah.
So this is very nice. But I think here I talk more about so-called entanglement entropy, but I think you think more about thermal entropy probably. And so, I mean, there's certainly lots of possibilities and making connections to the plasma, but I would have to think how to really make a measurable or observable out of this entanglement entropy in the context of the quark-gluon plasma. But I think the better, more straightforward chances to do more measurements would be this vorticity, actually. Although, of course, the question is, I mean, given the orders of magnitude, whether this could really be seen, but I'm quite hopeful.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next question is from Feline.
Hi, yes. Thank you for the talk. It was a very nice talk. And I had a question about the what you mentioned about the Fisher metric being able to reproduce the anti de Sitter metric.
Yes.
Is there also a possibility to reproduce a de Sitter metric?
That's a very good question. Excellent question. I haven't thought about de Sitter. I know that, for instance, if you do something similar for free fermions, then you actually get a sphere. thanks for this very, very nice suggestion. I think that would be very interesting indeed. And I mentioned this just as a fact, but I think this is something to be really explored in a lot of detail. And I think the sitter is that would in fact be very, very interesting. But then of course we still have this step of also finding the dynamics just in addition to finding the geometry, but certainly it's an excellent question. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so Marty had a question.
Thanks for a very nice talk. So I have a slightly broader question, possibly a bit provocative, but the question of, you know, entanglement entropy in the way we see it relies very much on locality. And when we try to understand something about quantum gravity, one of the questions I want to ask is, you know, have you thought about how non-locality could play a role in our assessment of entanglement entropy? Because we know, for example, that when we have long-range forces, so forget the Ising model, but if, even in condensed matter, if we have long-range forces like gravity or electromagnetism, then a lot of these extensive properties, things that we think of as extensive thermodynamic properties, are no longer quite, you know, things don't work out in quite that simple fashion. So I'm wondering, in when we are talking about things to do with quantum gravity, whether one must possibly revise or rethink from this non-locality perspective. And I'm wondering whether, you know, in this ADS-CFT context, if you've ever had to encounter any kind of non-locality.
Yeah, okay, that's a good question. So, I mean, I think maybe we should discuss this in more detail later, because it's very interesting, and I just try to give a short answer right now. So first of all, I gave a very special example of entanglement entropy where I looked at two Hilbert spaces corresponding to two space-time regions, and then I naturally have a scale in the problem which is the size of my region, okay? And the scale, and in particular, the scale of the region also appears in my gravitational, in my gravitational result. Which was here. Okay, so essentially, you can think of the scale of the region appearing here, and the same size of the region also, of course, appears in the gravitational calculation, just because I consider the same region, and so the scale is set again by this width. The second comment is that, of course, we have a slightly odd form of quantum gravity here, because we have a negative cosmological constant, which is, of course, different from what we have in the real world. And and this entails that the symmetries in this higher dimensional space are exactly the same. So the isometries of the space form the same symmetry group as the fields in this conformal field theory here at the boundary. And for this reason, there's this holographic nature that we have the same amount of degrees of freedom here than in the boundary. And that's why all these nice things work, because, due to this holographic nature, and then also entanglement entropy is, it's not extensive in this way. There's this scaling with the boundary degrees of freedom. So we do have a different kind of form of non-locality, I would say. I mean, it's still local in this particular meaning, because we have this holographic principle. So in this sense, here it's well understood why it works well, but of course your great question is very, very interesting. So what happens if we go to standard space? There's also things like so-called flat space holography. So if we don't have this somewhat unnatural situation of a negative cosmological constant, what would happen then? And of course, that's a very interesting question, but of course also much, much harder to answer, but certainly very interesting. And maybe we can discuss a little more in the discussion session. Thanks.
Yes, I also hope there will be much more time for us to meet on RAMO and in other virtual spaces. So for the time being, thank you very much, Johanna. Thank you very much to the two other speakers in our first session.